I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hey, it's Kimberly, host of the Start Me Up podcast. If you like your politics with some loose talk and salty language, you're going to love my show. I interview the coolest people like Mary Trump, Kathy Griffin, and DNC chair Jamie Harrison. The Start Me Up podcast has an easygoing, casual style and a strong emphasis on left-leaning politics. We also have frank discussions about sex and more than a few spirited rants. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup or wherever you get your podcasts and start listening today.
Thanks to Noom for supporting Mola, She Wrote. Getting in shape isn't about a number on the scale, and Noom helps you develop a new relationship with food, build healthier habits, and feel better about yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com/AG. And thanks to Best Fiends for supporting Mola, She Wrote. Best Fiends is a unique and exciting puzzle experience unlike other puzzle games out there. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events so it never gets old. Download free at the Apple Store app or on Google Play.
This is Andrew McCabe, and you're listening to Mola, She Wrote.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
What do I have to get involved with Putin for? I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
So, it is political. You're a communist.
No, Mr. Green. Communism is just a red herring. Like all members of the oldest profession, I'm a capitalist.
Hello, and welcome to Mueller, She Wrote. I'm your host, AG, and with me today are Jordan Coburn.
Hello.
And Amanda Reeder.
Hello.
Hello. We have a great show for you today. A lot of Mueller news is ripening, which sounds weird, but it is, including some court rulings that will impact cases from the Mueller investigation. We have stories about Eric Prince, who's back in the news, Concord Management, that's Yevgeny Prigozhin's joint. The Don McGahn subpoena has news. Rosneft, we've got a new story from Rosneft. Christopher Steele is in the news, and some sabotage with Robert Hyde. That's that crazy dude that was stalking Marie Yovanovitch.
Yep.
And an interview with the host of the On Topic podcast, Renato Mariotti.
Nice.
Who's here to talk to us about the legal ramifications of the decisions and the filings going forward in the McGahn subpoena case by the House Judiciary. For the latest on the 2020 election and coronavirus outbreak, check out and the Senate's investigation into Hunter Biden and all that. Check out our sister podcast, The Daily Beans, first thing Monday morning or Sunday night if you're a patron. How are you? How was your weekend?
It's been really. I've had a friend here from San Francisco, and we've just been eating everything for 2 days.
Yes,
literally all I've done since I last saw you is eat.
I know. I'm on the last final week coming up, like approaching the final week of my fitness challenge. Mm-hmm. At Orange Theory Fitness is an 8 week long thing.
Mm-hmm.
4 weeks in, I was in third place. I think I might take a dip coming up here at the end.
But when you're done, feast.
Yeah. Well, I'm already doing that, but. There were burritos.
What are you supposed to do? Say no?
Right?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, my God.
You grab that burrito with two hands.
And you eat it sideways.
Eat it sideways.
My poor friend, she's Irish. And she, I'm so forceful with my love of San Diego Mexican food, as I've talked about before on the show. Mm-hmm. And at the very end of the trip just now, she goes, I don't really like Mexican food that much. And that's like all I took her to eat the whole weekend. But she didn't want to disappoint me because I was so enthusiastic. And I was like, oh, shit. I'm so sorry.
That's so funny.
Well, enjoy your enchiladas on the flight home.
Yes.
Oh, God. San Diego has like so many different amazing pockets of cuisine also. True. So for next time, mm-hmm. You could check out like Convoy.
True. Controversial. She said she thinks that San Diego's food scene might be better than the Bay Area.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Controversial statement.
Fighting words.
But she's a foodie, so, okay. You know. She was a Yelp super elite.
Oh, super elite.
Oh, yes. Dang.
Get I'm just, this chick some napkins.
She's got the drawer full of ketchup packets.
Yes. Oh, God. You know, they don't give you, not that I ever go through the McDonald's drive-thru late at night. Not that I would know that, but they don't give you ketchup anymore unless you ask
for it.
Yeah, they haven't been doing that for a while.
That is one of their only redeeming qualities.
Right?
Their ketchup.
I always forget to ask.
That's all the massive amounts of it they would give to you.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes when I go into fast food restaurants, I prefer the ketchup pump to the packets.
True.
Like In-N-Out?
Yeah.
Their setup is way better, I agree.
Yeah, even though their fries are shit.
Interesting. Yeah. I love their fries.
We just had this discussion the other day where I was like, there's two wolves inside me. One wants to eat like nutritious, whole, healthy food. I made us like really good vegan quinoa.
They're so good.
And the other wolf inside me wants McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
And so. They're both on Jordan's t-shirts.
I heard Beyond Meat is coming to McDonald's too, which is very exciting for a non-meat eater. Mm-hmm. But speaking of feasting, really quick, what I did this weekend, do you all watch MasterChef?
Yes.
Okay, do you remember Dino, the winner that has like the tattoos and he always says baby doll and he's like he's like kind of insane.
Yeah.
Okay, so he was doing a menu for a Veterans Foundation fundraiser basically on Friday. So me, Dallas, Sam, Dallas's wife, AJ and AJ's wife Jenna and Ryan and I, we all went to this food tasting fundraiser where Dino was a chef and we got to meet Dino and he explained the menu and all that shit. It was like a 5-course meal.
MasterChef super fan.
Oh, I am.
I know.
Ryan and I and everyone that went to that, like, clearly we were the only there for Dino and everybody else was there for the Veterans Association. So it's like everybody's like above 70 years old and it's just this like table of tattooed pierced like young people that are just
MasterChef.
Yeah, we're all like drunk and just fucking, it was the best. It was so fun. We're like, bring us Dino, bring out Dino.
That's what it was like for us when Rich had and I think he still works around too, around town.
Yeah.
He was on the other chef show.
Top Chef?
Chopped? Yeah, Top Chef.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he had our gang. He like he's into tots. That's what his thing was. He made
tater tots.
Yeah,
ooh,
like gourmet.
Tots.
Like
Yeah,
he had these ones that were infused with Gruyere.
Yeah, they were good. You know what else I discovered this weekend? And my wife's been telling me about this for 5 years. There's a shop in Little Italy called Shakespeare's, and they have all my favorite British chocolate.
Oh, that's
fun.
So if
you are from the British Isles and you live in SoCal, Shakespeare's in San Diego has everything.
You didn't know about Shakespeare's?
I knew about it. I just never went.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they have a little tea room up there.
They do. It's so cute. Yeah.
And they have, of course, downstairs a Shakespeare's pub. Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
So my Irish friend and I, we used to live together in London. And so she lives in California now, too. And so we went to this amazing British shop.
Is this the one that's like kind of in Linda Vista, actually?
No,
Mission
it's,
Hills.
It's down by Lucha Libre on
right,
the 5
exactly.
in Washington.
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Cool.
Anyway.
And we took my goddaughter there for a Harry Potter high tea.
Oh, cute.
And we were Bobatons. It was cool.
Yeah.
It was great.
Legit.
I fucking love food.
Yeah. And as Jack Handy says, if Jesus lives inside of us, I hope he likes burritos because that's what he's getting. So we have a lot of news to get to. I know you're here. It's a new show. You're welcome. But first, we have a few corrections.
It's a mistake. It's hard for me to say I'm sorry.
Oh, I made a mistake.
Okay, from Sloane Russell and also Leonard Grossman. You are a ray of truthful light. Oh, thank you. FYI, capital punishment can be used for federal and military crimes like treason, not just state crimes. Also, as a gruesome side note, the government hasn't been executing people for federal crimes, but Barr is bringing it back. She wanted us to know that capital punishment is a legal penalty under the United States federal government criminal justice system. It can actually be imposed for treason. Hope it's sunny and lovely in San Diego. You are amazing. It actually just stopped raining. So
it is now.
It just needs to dry up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. From Gerald and also Maddie, it's awesome to hear civil disagreement about primary picks. Thank you. The Three Mexicos is not a Trumpism, despite sounding like one. It actually came from the derps over at Fox News. The Fox and Friends weekend crew referred to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras as the three Mexican countries in a segment about President Trump's plan to cut aid to Central America.
So they started it.
Yeah. It was the derps at Fox News. Would love to see y'all at a live show to meet my daily news with swearing sheroes.
Yeah.
From Hannah. I love your show. It's the only news I can listen to without feeling existential dread. It's all the burrito talk. While it's true most of Bernie's base won't vote for Biden for president, then the other way around, not most of, but more of, it's disingenuous to say Bernie voters won't vote blue in down ballot races or would stay home if Biden gets the nomination without polling to back that claim up. Sanders' strongest demographics, 18 to 40, people of color and college educated, were a major driver of the blue wave in 2018. According to Pew, each group voting blue by 30 plus point margins with a higher than average turnout and electing many moderate Democrats. Thank you preemptively from me for the next 8 months of panic. Keep up the good work. I do have polling that does show percentages of which of the candidates would vote for another candidate. Mm-hmm. Yang was the number one candidate whose supporters would not vote for anyone else. Hmm.
Yeah, that actually checks out with the Yang supporters I've seen on Twitter, too, which is interesting because like a lot of celebrities kind of endorse him, mm-hmm. too. And it seems like these are celebrities that just shit on politics constantly and are not in the space where they're willing to do the vote blue no matter.
Is there like
thing.
A hashtag? Because there's like the Bernie or bust hashtag. Is there a Yang hashtag like Yang or?
There was the Yang gang. But they were very about like those are the folks who would never fucking vote.
Yeah.
And they'd just be like him. I'll vote for anyone else. Right. Fuck you.
Yeah. That was kind of the feeling. It is very interesting. And and again, that was only a couple people that I saw. And
right. Anecdotally.
Yes. And I know that a lot of Yang supporters are proudly voting blue.
Yeah. But I did get that from an actual poll.
Gotcha.
Yes. I don't know. I didn't look at the breakdown of the poll, mm-hmm. how many people, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't test the validity, mm-hmm. but it was a poll that I saw. Mm-hmm. From Aaron Ross, science reporter with Oregon Public Broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Hi, all of MSW and the Daily Beans. I can't say how much your news and commentary keeps me sane. Everything is well reported and fair. Your election coverage has been a breath of fresh air. In last Monday's edition, a few of you were asking why people shouldn't purchase or wear medical masks as a precaution. I mean, if it works for health officials, shouldn't we be safe? The thing is, there's currently a global shortage of medical masks, and people who are sick or caring for sick really need them. And since most people don't know how to properly wear a mask anyway, they're pretty useless for the general public, like you said. And wash your hands.
Nice.
Seriously, I love the podcast. Glad you're taking time out of politics to cover an incredibly important story. One journalist to another, your reporting helps me sift through the mess and focus on my job, writing about science and coronavirus.
Aw.
Hey,
that's
thanks.
Cool.
Isn't that nice?
That's wow. So nice. Mm. Thank you.
Oregon Public Radio. Nice.
Hell yeah. Journalists.
I know. I love them. From Alex Schaefer, you're honestly keeping me and probably several hundred thousand others from having a stroke. The world is dark. You give us light to remind us that other people are in the darkness, too, and we're not alone. Your comment on youth voter turnout, wasn't wrong, per se, but nuanced. The 13% number on Tuesday for 18 to 29-year-olds wasn't their turnout, but it was the percent of turnout that was 18 to 29. Around 19% of the electorate is 18 to 29. So the percent of that turnout shouldn't be that high anyway. It's still low, but the participation rate is around 68%, and to know actual turnout, I would need the number of voters, which we didn't know yet. To conclude, youngsters weren't energized like we wanted, but it's better than it sounds.
Okay.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
From Taylor Beauvoir. Your legal reporting is top-notch. I'm always super impressed and happy to learn every time legal news drops. Amanda mentioned having climate anxiety and then went on to talk about Biden's support coming from oil money and fame and frame his environmental policy as less progressive than Bernie's. Just so you know, Biden signed a no fossil fuel money pledge this campaign cycle. Additionally, he introduced the first climate change bill to Congress in the 80s. Biden's climate goal is also the same as Bernie's, carbon-free by 2050, and he plans to commit $5 trillion in total to fight climate change.
Nice.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
I hadn't looked up the bullet points on his on his climate proposal.
Yeah, that's awesome.
More than any other podcast, it's nice to hear from you all about the things that give me anxiety while I'm living abroad. I appreciate the coverage and the real conversation that takes place about the state of our nation and how we can help. Thank you.
Yeah.
So those are corrections. If you have any for us, please head to MuellerSheWrote.com, click contact, select corrections, and build us a compliment sandwich. We'll get it right eventually. We do have a lot of news to get to, so let's get to it with just the facts. All right, so we got some big news in the BuzzFeed FOIA case seeking the underlying Mueller investigation evidence this week as the judge, Reggie Walton, questioned the credibility of Bill Barr and the Department of Justice after their spin on the Mueller findings. in that 4-page memo he released last April. The judge then ordered the Department of Justice to hand over the entire unredacted Mueller report to the court so he could review it in camera, which means, you know, in his private office. We have a with a camera.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm going to take a pic now.
Oh, interesting name then.
Yeah. It's Latin for under the roof, I think.
In camera.
We have a lot more on the details of this case and the path forward in the interview later with Renato Mariotti. Walton gave the Department of Justice until March 30th to hand over the unredacted Mueller report. That's the day before the Supreme Court is set to hear the Deutsche Bank and Mazars cases and the day before Bill Barr is set to testify to the House Judiciary Committee, provided he's still the Attorney General. Please note, we have no inside sources, just public reporting to speculate that Bill Barr might leave his job. It's just what I think. And from Politico, U.S. prosecutors from the Mueller team say they have a mystery witness who will directly implicate Putin's chef Prigozhin, who is the head of Concord Management and ran the Internet Research Agency. And it will implicate him in schemes to carry out election interference overseas. The trial is set to begin in D.C. next month, and this witness is prepared to testify in the case that Mueller brought against 13 Russians and Concord Management. None of the charged individuals are known to have been arrested or face charges, but the entity, Concord Management, actually hired American lawyers to fight the case in what we all considered to be like a show trial. A trolling of the American courts. Because we know from previous reporting, they did that to get their hands on Mueller documents, which they later falsified and released, saying they hacked the Mueller probe. Until this reporting, evidence was expected to be comprised of emails, budgets, pretty dry shit, records detailing the effort called Project Lacta. So the prosecution's announcement that they have a live witness prepared to detail face-to-face dealings with Prigozhin came as a surprise. So you remember that spy that was deep in the Kremlin, and we tried to pull him out, and he resisted. He said, no, I'm going to stay. But then eventually came back to the United States. I have beans on it being him. Because one of the lawyers dropped some hints in the February 21st hearing for this case, the Concord Management case. First, they're having the witness testify under a pseudonym. And as we know, Bob Woodward wrote in the book Fear that six human sources backed up the CIA's assessment that the Russians sought to undermine Clinton in 2016. And that Kremlin source is one of those six sources. His name we now know to be Oleg Smolenkov. So my beans are on Oleg. We may never know who the mystery witness is, but that's who I think it is.
Interesting. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
If you're representing an entity that's international and they're not physically showing up and like speaking for themselves, but you're getting paid for money that's overseas, is there any sort of like, or do you think there's any sort of extra process you have to go through to sort of register yourself as like a representative for an overseas company?
Most court cases, I assume that you have to present yourself as the defense team and the judge has to approve it.
Okay, yeah.
I'm assuming it's probably that sort of encapsulates that sort of process.
Like, just all within the courts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you remember these guys, you did reporting on this, Jordan, their filings in court were like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ridiculous.
they quoted Tweety Bird and
Disney,
Sylvester.
Yeah, cartoons or whatever.
And they dropped the F-bomb in it a couple times. Yes. And the judge was like, this isn't helping you. But it was all supposed to just be this show trial anyway. And here all of a sudden Mueller's team is like, oh, we got a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And I just imagine Concord Management's like, fuck.
Yeah.
So that'll be funny, I think, personally. Mm-hmm. We'll be back with more news, including what Chris Steele is saying about the Mueller report, another judge requesting more Russian memos, and an update about that 0.5% commission, $280 million from the sell-off of Rosneft that's been missing. Mm-hmm. We have some updates on that, so stay with us. Hey everybody, it's AG, and this episode of Mueller, She Wrote is brought to you by Noom. I used to think getting in shape meant being thin, without any body fat, having a diet of nothing but kale and kale-flavored air, but I was wrong. Getting in shape doesn't have to be about a number on the scale or losing a specific amount of weight or anything like that. Actually, it's just about building healthier habits and feeling better about yourself, having more energy, and that's why I love Noom. I've been using Noom for about a year and a half. And they helped me develop a new relationship with food, and they personalized the plan to my needs, my lifestyle needs. They teach you the psychology behind the decisions you make and then help you keep track of everything from workouts and steps to analyzing your diet and recommending healthy recipes. And they also connect you with a personally assigned goal specialist and a community of other people using Noom, so you have all the support you need to empower your change. I've been doing it for about a year and a half. I lost some weight up front, but now it's just sort of about maintenance and having a better relationship with food with no guilt. Because with Noom, you pick the goals that are right for you, and they personalize a program to help your goals become reality. It's based in a cognitive behavioral approach, and they use personalized courses to help you reach your goals. You don't have to commit to a rigorous plan at all. It's pretty easy. It's just 10 minutes a day, and they make it super convenient with everything in the Noom app. So you don't have to have a different app for, like, one for tracking steps, one for logging food, one for getting your nutrition stuff. It's all there in the Noom app. And there's no shaming. They don't use negative reinforcement, so there's no shaming. Just tips to help you get back on track. So it's a perfect time to make a step toward healthier habits. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/AG. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/AG to start your trial today. That's Noom, Noom.com/AG. Okay, so welcome back. From the Daily Beast this week, Christopher Steele spoke to a group of students at Oxford University in England, attacking the Mueller report and Trump's Department of Justice in his first public remarks since his dossier was published in 2017. This was like a little private group with, mm-hmm. of students, but Daily Beast was invited. Steele said the Mueller probe failed to do any drilling down into financial networks and leverage, which he said is the crux of how Russian influence works. Mm-hmm. Steele said he was interviewed by the Mueller team for 2 full days, but said, "I was surprised that very little of what I had discussed with them appeared in the final report." He criticized the probe for being too narrow in scope and failing to follow up on crucial evidence. He complained about certain witnesses not being interviewed at all, like Don Jr., for example. And he also went after the Department of Justice and its Inspector General report on the Russia probe, which criticized the FBI's interactions with Chris Steele. Mm-hmm. He went on to say that he is not cooperating with the Durham Barr investigation. You know how Barr, like, yeah. appointed Durham to
redo?
Yeah. He's not cooperating with that shit. He says, "I fully cooperated with the IG, and as far as I'm concerned, we've done our duty. We've said everything we've had to say on the matter."
Yeah. At a certain point, it's like, you need to retain some personal dignity. Not get dragged through this country's shit show.
Totally. Like, how many follow-ups are you going to have? So you had the Russia probe, then you had the IG report on the Russia probe, and now you want to do another probe on the probe? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm done with your probes.
Exactly. I'm done with your probes.
Fuck your probe. Yeah. And from Josh Gerstein at Politico. I love this guy. There's another judge ordering the review of a Russia probe-related document in camera. A federal judge in D.C. has ordered the NSA to turn over a memo that details a conversation in which Trump pleaded with former NSA chief Mike Rogers to take action to rebut news reports about collusion between Trump and Russia. Sounds like another obstruction of justice charge to me. The judge in the case, Colleen Collar Cottley.
This is the best name I've ever heard.
So great. She said in a ruling Friday she needs to read the memo written by Rogers' deputy Rick Leggett to decide whether it can be blocked from release in response to a FOIA suit. Trump and the Department of Justice oppose the in-camera review by the judge, but the judge disagrees, saying in light of the arguments and legal principles, making a responsible de novo determination of the NSA's exemption claims requires an in-camera review. That's a lot of Latin for, I gotta look at the shit before I decide mm-hmm. if we can release it.
Fair.
The Department of Justice says the memo is classified and exempt under the FOIA rules because it describes a confidential conversation between the president and a top advisor. The watchdog group that filed the FOIA request, the Protect Democracy Project, says the privilege was effectively waived after Mueller included a summary of the conversation in his report last year. The judge says to make a decision, she must compare what's in the memo to what's in the Mueller report. This, paired with the Walton decision in the BuzzFeed FOIA case, indicate that judges are sick of your shit.
Yep.
They're increasingly unwilling to take representations from the Trump administration and the Department of Justice about the contents of documents being withheld and or redacted in these FOIA cases. The NSA has until March 13th, that's 4 days from now, to hand over the memo for review. So I thought that was...
Yeah, I'm really glad this fight is not done trying to get these unredacted memos and, part pieces of the report. Because it's like, it was such an egregious offense, you know, how much we can assume that things were redacted when they shouldn't have been. And to think that that was going to be the end of it was very discouraging. So I'm really thankful for, BuzzFeed and these judges and these watchdog groups and everybody that's trying to relentlessly uncover that stuff.
Yeah, it's really fascinating that it's all just sort of coming to light now because this is April of last year, Barr released that memo and everyone just threw their hands up and went, well, that's the end of the Mueller thing. Mm-hmm. But this stuff is going to be coming out for years to come.
Right. Wouldn't Definitely. They like to believe that this was the end?
Yeah. Yeah, they're just, I think they're just hoping it's the end until after the election.
Yeah.
Although I don't think that, I mean, the whole Mueller report should have, you know, spoken for itself, mm-hmm. and it didn't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe the Department of Justice is like, well, we better comply with these orders. Yeah. Our base isn't going to care.
Yeah. Really quick, I had a comment about the Christopher Steele thing. I feel like as someone that works in intelligence, he should know when you can't, when you hit a, I don't know if like it's different in Britain where he works in his jurisdiction, but it seems like he didn't give any credit to the idea that you can only get so far if a witness is, you know, non-cooperative. And if you literally can't discover more, it seems like that's what they said in the report, basically, is, you know, we just couldn't, or people refused to talk to us, or we just had to make a judgment call on how long are we going to sit around and try to like wait and push for these things, you know, when they're reluctant to give it to us.
Yeah, and Mueller outlined that. He brought that up in mm-hmm. the Mueller report, where he says, look, there'd be a lot more if people didn't lie, mm-hmm. Delete mm-hmm. their conversations, and fuck with my shit.
Yeah.
Although I do think that a lot of the scope problems, mm-hmm. I don't know that Christopher Steele understands that the scope may have been limited, probably was limited,
yeah.
by Rosenstein, who exactly. had promised to land the plane for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to, you know, it is a little bit disingenuous mm-hmm. to blame Mueller for that, but he also doesn't directly blame Mueller. He just, mm-hmm. he says the Mueller report
okay,
sucks
yeah.
because it's missing all of this shit.
Yeah.
And one thing that Mueller was not allowed to mm-hmm. investigate was all the financial stuff, which is Christopher Steele's number one thing.
Yep.
He's like, that's how Russia does their stuff.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. His money stuff. And
you
won't even let him do that. And we also know that Mueller was not allowed to investigate whether the vote was impacted or not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which blew my mind.
Yeah.
But could be part of an open and ongoing intelligence community, mm-hmm. Intelligence investigation, mm-hmm. which we haven't heard anything about either.
Yeah. Yeah. His frustrations I sympathize with, and I think I share them. But just we have that perspective of knowing, you know, DTJ, for example, was incredibly reluctant. There, every witness in that case, with the exception of people like Rick Gates, and who else would you even put in his camp? He seems to be the most cooperative out of like all the witnesses in that report.
He was ultra quick. Bannon was pretty cooperative.
Yeah. Yeah. But aside from that, it's like they were just constantly hitting walls. So, yeah. Yeah.
Gold stone. Yeah. He's just overly friendly and weird.
Yep.
Nunberg was drunk.
So drunk.
I watched the clip the other day. It came up in my time hop, you know, a year ago mm-hmm. when Aaron Burnett out front was like, you smell like booze, buddy. And he's like, I haven't had anything to drink. And she's like, I can smell alcohol yeah. on your breath.
That's saying a lot in D.C. too. I feel like that whole city is constantly half drunk. So if you come
you
in and
to beat a coat, right?
Yeah, and someone's like, dude, hold your shit, man.
Keep it together.
You're ruining it for all of us.
That's the only reason she brought it up.
Yeah.
Don't wreck it for the rest of us.
Functioning alcoholics. Just kidding.
And Bloomberg News put out a story this week saying Singapore accounts reveal a payment to help secure Kurdish deals, and that Rosneft paid $250 million to an external consultant to help secure those deals. The fee was linked to deals that helped Rosneft become the dominant foreign player in the Kurdish oil industry. In the process, this drew Russia deeper into Iraq, just as Putin was seeking to bolster the Kremlin's position in the Middle East. The $250 million was paid over 2 years by Rosneft's Swift subsidiary, Swiss subsidiary Rosneft Trading, the same subsidiary the U.S. imposed sanctions on last month, by the way. The fee was disclosed a few weeks ago in the financial statements of a Singaporean subsidiary created by Rosneft as a holding company for its investments in Kurdistan. And Singaporean is interesting because if you remember, KT McFarland, when she was taken out as Flynn's number two, and she was a Bud McFarland like protege, all about putting nuclear reactors in the Middle East, she was appointed the ambassador to Singapore, and Singapore was one of the four ambassadors that was at that Kislyak meeting that shouldn't have been.
Hmm.
The consultant wasn't named, but I can't help but wonder if this is the mystery company from Country A we've been chasing for almost 3 years on the podcast. We will keep you posted on that. It's just interesting that that 0.5% commission was paid to an unknown entity from a Singaporean subsidiary created by Rosneft to bolster its oil investments in Kurdistan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this week, we know a federal appeals court dismissed the House Judiciary's case for a subpoena for Don McGahn, saying that it's not the court's job to play referee between the executive and the legislative branch, except that's totally the fucking court's job. As expected, and I think we put beans on this, the House has filed to have the case reheard en banc, which we discussed with Glenn Kirshner in the interview last week. And en banc means all 11 judges will rehear the case and make the call. Four are Republican appointees. It is a heavily democratically filled Court of Appeals in D.C. I think Merrick Garland's in charge. I believe that on the merits, the House will win this one, on the merits, which would mean the Trump administration would likely file for an appeal with the Supreme Court. And when I say on the merits, when the appeals court, this past week, dismissed the case in a 2-1 ruling, they didn't do it on the merits. They didn't say that the House doesn't have the right to do this. What they said is that the courts aren't shouldn't be making these decisions, so it was a jurisdictional dismissal. But if they listen to it and hear it on the merits, I guarantee you the House is going to win this one. But again, it'll just be appealed up to SCOTUS. So look for that likely appeal with the Supreme Court and probably a stay. We'll continue to follow this case and keep you posted. So that's what's going on with the Don McGahn testimony.
Nice. Sweet.
It's going to go on into next year.
Yeah, and I hope it's going to drag.
And I hope that the new Senate and the new Congress still just continue to pursue these investigations. You need to get Don McGahn in there, because if he has any new information that we didn't get out of the Mueller report, that's significant.
A reminder to flip the Senate, everyone. It's not just about the president.
Yeah, and to flip, get Trump out, and then we can investigate him criminally.
And the House says that they will, if there's new information that Don McGahn has, they've said in one of their filings, we'll open up a new, you know, we'll file more impeachment articles.
Double impeachment.
Impeachment two.
Double stuffed impeachment.
What's the full, what's the one that's like mega stuffed or like?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Oreos?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
They just keep making new ones that have more cream in them.
Somebody did a thing that was just all stuffed where it's just like one cookie, but it's like it's just giant.
I don't know about this, but I'm curious. One thing I will say about moving here, Canada's fairly similar in a lot of ways. It's not like I moved here from somewhere that's like massively different. Canada and the UK are very similar countries. However, when I first moved here, I was like, holy shit. There's like 10 million more options for junk food.
Yeah, I was just going to, I was reading your mind. I was going to say the cookie aisle is insane, isn't it?
Oh my God. And the cereal options. Yeah. I mean, it's nuts. Yogurt, it's everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm used to having like a couple of options, you know? But when I moved here, I was like, oh my fucking God, there's like 9 more flavors of Oreo. I lost my mind.
Yes. And the grocery stores themselves are just incredibly large warehouses to account for said options.
Yeah. Never let me lose in a grocery store by myself. I'll be there for hours.
Never shop when you're hungry.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. You were talking about something important and I was like, Oreos.
No, I was done. I was on to Oreos. So, you know, that was an appropriate track for that conversation.
I'm glad I bring a much needed political commentary to the show.
You do. I appreciate you. We'll be right back with Hot Notes, Sabotage, and the Fantasy Indictment League. So stay with us. Hey, everybody. It's AG. One thing I've realized while doing research for Mueller, She Wrote, is the deeper you dig, the more layers you uncover. And that's what I love about the new puzzle game called Best Fiends, except without all the corruption and criminal activity. Best Fiends is actually a great distraction when I need a break from today's insane politics. And the more I play, the more fun it gets. I reach each new level. I feel like I'm uncovering a new layer in a story that you get to be a part of. It's amazingly fun. It's free to download. It's a 5-star rated game with a bright, vibrant design, fun characters that you can level up, and it combines an exciting story with challenging puzzles to engage your brain. But it's also a casual game because I am not a gamer, N-O-T, not a gamer, but this is so easy and fun to play. You collect these characters. You need to use them strategically for each level. I'm over level 100 now. I'm kind of a champion, so I'm really excited about it. But you can share your progress via social media, and you can engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. They have thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month, so it stays fresh. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can play offline, which is super important, because that way I can play it on the metro or the subway or on a plane. It doesn't require the internet, so I play it when I'm traveling. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R, Best Fiends.
Hot Notes.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Somebody who just can't seem to stay under the radar, Eric Prince. Jordan, you have something going on with that fuckface. What's
yeah,
up?
Yeah. So this is a big headline that came out over the last couple days, but we have he's back. Reporting came out that Eric Prince, he's the sketchy security Seychelles man. He has been recruiting former British and U.S. spies over
Secret
the years.
Seychelles man. Yeah. Secret Seychelles man.
He would love that nickname, and I hate that.
Yeah. No one tell him.
Yeah. Especially with that song. That's all he ever wanted. but
all of your wildest dreams will come true.
Yeah, but he's over the last couple of years. Yeah, I guess he's been recruiting spies from Britain and the U.S. And this is for intelligence gathering operations that were specifically seeking to infiltrate Democratic congressional campaigns, labor organizations, and other groups that just are not fans or good for Trump. Fans of or good for Trump. So, for example, one of the former spies, he's an ex-MI6 officer. His name's Richard Seddon. Seddon, Seddon. But he helped run a 2017 operation to copy files and film and record conversations in Michigan's office of the American Federation of Teachers. This is the pretty much like biggest teachers union or one of them in the nation. So they were looking for info that was gonna that they could release to the public and would be damaging to them. So it's shit like that where they're literally just recording people. Then the next year, the same guy infiltrated the campaign of Democrat Abigail Spanberger. And all these operations, they're ran by this group called Project Veritas, which is a conservative group that's known for spying specifically on news orgs, Democratic politicians, and liberal advocacy groups. And yeah, it sounds pretty like old school spy shit, literally just hidden cameras and microphones. And all of this information is coming out now as a result of the discovery process in a court case that's between that teachers union and Project Veritas. You know, them basically saying, hey, not okay, not chill. And we're just hopefully going to get more and more information about Prince and how he's been connected to this all. There's nothing that's been explicitly tying Trump and, you know, his desires to the operations of this group. But the Trump Foundation did give $20,000 to the group in 2015. And he brought up footage at a debate once that the group allegedly got as dirt on Obama and Hillary. So
that is so fascinating. You know what Watergate was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bugging and recording inside the Democratic National Headquarters in the Watergate Hotel.
Yep.
That's what this is.
Yeah. It would appear that it's incredibly not okay.
Mm-mm.
Right? Unless you're the FBI or an intelligence agency, I don't think you're allowed to just do that.
No. So this you could call this our Watergate. Because yeah. That's precisely what it was.
Yeah. But for unions...
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like smaller groups, I guess, instead of something as huge as the DNC. But I mean, who knows what's going to be uncovered about their activities if this stuff is coming out right now. This is the first I'm hearing of this.
Yeah, same.
It does also make sense, though, that that's exclusively kind of the work Eric Prince does being a security official. He's the one that tried to like privatize the war in Afghanistan by suggesting they do private contractors instead of troops. And so
and he did. He did have Blackwater.
Yeah. And so he's like a huge part of, you know, the Trump mindset, which is privatize the military and intelligence industry and let's take away all institutional knowledge because that goes great.
And Eric Prince's sister is Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, who's all about privatizing education.
What a horrible sibling group.
Yeah. I wonder what Thanksgiving must be like at the Prince house.
Oh, God. Yeah. What do
they play? They play Monopoly.
Yes.
But like for real.
Yes. Seriously. They like added their own plebeian pieces or something to make themselves yeah, like, feel more.
Instead of like Mediterranean and Boardwalk and Park Place, it's like yeah. The prison system, the railroads,
yes.
Education system.
Like, yeah, I got all four. Mm. Betsy's got the schools, I've got the military. Who else is in their family and what shit are they doing?
Yeah.
Who raised these people?
Jesus. Do you ever just disassociate when you think about all the evil in the world?
Oh, yeah.
Same. Same.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what our entire podcast does.
Oh, yeah, God. But it is just, it's crazy.
That was our secondary name was Dissociation Nation.
God, right? Like, this is too much. Let's zone out, eat Cheez-Its, and watch TV. Just kidding. Stay politically engaged, everyone. It's really important.
Yes. But sometimes if you need to disassociate and eat Cheez-Its, that's also okay.
Yeah, a little Rick and Morty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Mm, yes.
Yep. Yeah. Eating a sleeve of saltines in my underwear, watching Carlito's Way. Thank you, Patton Oswalt.
And this is just something that I read in the article that I think is a fun fact. One of the operatives that they used in one of their spying missions was a graduate of Liberty University.
Oh, no. Is that
so those are the kind of jobs
which is no longer in business, right?
It's like the Christian, it's a huge, massively like Falwell Jr. funded joint.
Yeah, okay. It's run by a pool boys. And
yeah, but it's this, and this is Liberty University. That's the one who, ironically, Eric Prince's sister, right? Wasn't it her that was like, or no, was it not her? No, it wasn't her. It was
that was
else.
Doing what?
Basically not collecting fees and student loan debt from people that had attended.
Oh, no, that was other private for-profit universities.
Mm. That wasn't Liberty?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Maybe.
Right.
Trump had a university.
No, you're probably right. They would have mentioned that in the article probably if that connection existed.
Yeah, it was just Trump University that you're thinking of. Ugh. That he had to pay a $25 million settlement for and paid Pam Bondi off $25,000 to not investigate.
Yes.
Who became then his impeachment lawyer, one of them.
Cool.
I'm going to find the story that I was thinking of so I can correct myself later in the show if that's okay.
Yeah. Okay, so my hot note. This week, we got a huge dump of Mueller 302s. Those are FBI interviews, notes about FBI interviews, in the BuzzFeed FOIA lawsuit. Jordan, you went over a lot of these, a lot of what was in that on Friday's Daily Beans, and included the long sought after Kushner interview, which came out, though it was still heavily redacted. As we know, and we will discuss in the interview later in the show, Bill Barr's credibility is under scrutiny by a couple of federal judges who have asked to review the entire unredacted Mueller report and a memo of a discussion between Trump and NSA chief Mike Rogers in camera. We also know Chris Steele is taking issue with the scope of the Mueller report, and we don't yet know how much of what he says is missing might be under those black boxes. We don't know yet. But there was one 302 in the pile of 600 pages that got released this week that I wanted to go over, and that's former Ambassador Richard Burt's executed proffer agreement with the FBI. This is a previously unknown proffer deal until this week. According to his proffer agreement, Russian banker Petter Avin, a billionaire oligarch with Alpha Bank, told Burt that Putin himself wanted a communications channel open between the Kremlin and the Trump transition team. Then Avin... and that outreach from Avin to Ambassador Burt is the only publicly known instance where Putin was personally involved in directing the Russian interference on behalf of the Trump campaign. If you all remember, Alpha Bank, where Avin worked, was involved in a surge of mystery traffic, internet traffic, to a server in Trump Tower in 2016. As we have reported, computer analysts concluded that Alpha Bank had developed a clandestine back channel to the Trump organization using that Alpha Bank server in Trump Tower. Burt, who was the ambassador to West Germany under Reagan, helped develop key points for an important foreign policy speech for Trump that he delivered in April 2016 with Kislyak in attendance. And Burt had dinner with Jeff Sessions, according to Mueller, to discuss policy positions. Burt also aided Russia with plans for a gas pipeline, and he sits on the board of a Luxembourg company founded by Petter Avin of Alpha Bank in 2013 that's currently investing billions of dollars in the American healthcare industry. Opening the back channel for Putin put Avin in a tough place because he could face sanctions over it. But you don't go against Putin. So Burt took Avin's idea to Symes and asked him to arrange a meeting with Kushner. That's where that whole Symes meeting with Kushner thing kept happening over and over again in the Mueller report. I think Symes was brought up hundreds of times in the Mueller report. So now we have a mystery witness set to testify next month in the Concord management case. We have a Kushner 302 that's mostly redacted.
Still.
We have two judges questioning the credibility of Bill Barr and Maine Justice's redactions in 302s and the Mueller report. We have Chris Steele telling Oxford University there's a lot of shit missing from the Mueller report in its current form. And of course, we have the mystery company from Country A, the Alpha Bank server communications after revelations of Putin himself wanting to set up a back channel, and the $250 million payout to Kurdish interests after the sell-off of Rosneft. So it appears we're getting closer to the full picture here. And we'll be following what these judges have to say about the appropriateness of what Bill Barr has been redacting. But what's under those black boxes is going to be extremely important. And Reggie Walton is taking no shit.
Love him.
Oh, I'm very excited.
So all of this stuff we've been tracking. And
I was just going to say it's good for this to be back in the news for us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when are you going to change the name of your stupid podcast?
Never. It's always relevant.
People have stopped asking me that question because it's so abundantly clear the answer is never.
I know, right?
We'll continue forever.
Yeah, our audience is as big as ever, and yeah, we're not leaving unless y'all do. So,
well, and these people aren't stopping criming, so they're still committing crimes now that I'm sure will be investigated later. But even the shit they've already done, as is demonstrated here, takes forever to get still to the bottom trickling. Of. Yeah.
It does. It takes a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As evidenced.
Yes. Really quick. Correction to my Liberty University's mix-up. It's Corinthian colleges.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those were the names of the ones that were closed.
I was thinking Apollo Group, but it was one of those for-profit.
Yes, but it was Betsy DeVos that was like getting threatened kind of to be getting trouble for still trying to collect those debts.
Yeah, the judge was like, I'll put you in fucking jail, lady.
Get your shit together. Stop doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so she had to pay a fine, not personally, but, you know, out of the Department of Education.
Yeah, but Liberty University is alive and well, and the career trajectory is apparently right into sketchy people's spy companies.
They have a whole class. They have a major focuses on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How to get into Eric Prince's spy jobs.
Can you imagine the internships? I swear that's why they created that university, is to establish a connection, probably just between, first off, profiting a bunch of money, and then people that have a bunch of money and want certain political ends.
Either that, or they were looking around like, there's no lawyers that want to do our shitty shit jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to make a university so we can get lawyers that will represent us in these fucking cases.
Who was that Greek dude that set up schools and shit? Was that Socrates or Plato?
One of those.
Yeah, wasn't it one of them?
Aristotle.
They just sat on some...
I love
some...
you. Who's that Greek dude?
A Roman
All
or whatever.
All we are is dust in the wind.
And
dude.
Then, yeah, I should definitely know this considering my degree.
Yeah, there's some sort of philosophy major out there who's like, Jordan!
Oh, yeah, no. Well, I studied political theory specifically, which
I think
largely
it might have been
is...
Socrates.
Okay, nice.
I think it might have been
Where they have their pretentious hill of free thinkers and whatnot.
Although I think, you know, one beget the other, Like, one taught another.
Definitely.
Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates. There's, mm-hmm. I don't know which came first. But...
I know Socrates was Plato's teacher.
Mm. Yes. And I think Plato was Aristotle's teacher. I think that's the... What? You'll send us a correction if it's not true.
They will.
But you're right. I think Socrates was the father.
Of the school. Yeah, because like the Socratic method and everything, I would assume that was named because he was like the teacher.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. All right.
Aren't we all teaching each other?
Aren't we all Socrates? Didn't he die from hemlock poisoning?
Yeah, he killed himself.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or I should say...
He died by suicide.
It was a conspiracy, I think that QAnon's looking into it right now.
Yeah.
Because that's how relevant it is.
Well, they were like, you can stop teaching people, and you can stop filling the minds of the youth with this free-thinking poison... Or you can drink literal poison. And he was like, okay.
Literal poison.
And he did the second one.
Hemlock.
I'm pretty sure that's how it went.
I think so.
Mm. I'm not so familiar with the story, but I believe you.
Yeah. I haven't read that story, God, 25 years.
Yeah, so. There's like depictions of him like on his deathbed surrounded by all of his lovers. Not sexually, but like.
Grape peelers and whatnot.
Yes. Yeah. Grape peelers? The people that feed you grapes.
You peel them.
Oh, God. No, I think these were like his... Brain disciples.
Ah. Brain disciples. Socrates is brain disciples.
Yeah.
If I ever had kids, I'd call them my brain disciples.
Coming up on Netflix. All right, are you ready for sabotage?
Yes.
Okay, so remember Robert Hyde, the creepy dude running for Congress in Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
over the objections of the GOP that texted back and forth with Parnas about Marie Yovanovitch's mm-hmm. whereabouts? Well, he's picked up 5 new complaints for stalking, making 9 total charges for abusing a protective order and criminal harassment. In the new charges, Hyde sent disparaging emails to his victim's clients and her husband under decoy email addresses threatening to expose his affair with the woman. Hyde will return to court April 15th when prosecutors will make another request to revoke his bail while the judge reviews the new evidence. So that's what the prosecutors are trying to get his bail revoked, saying he's got 5 more complaints since he's been out on bail. You need to revoke his bail.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, are you ready to play the Fantasy Indictment League?
Yes.
I'm going to be indicted!
No, wait, it's going to be okay.
Indicted!
Honey, Dick.
Indicted!
Honey.
I'm going to be indicted!
Hold it, they can't. It's going to be okay. Just calm down.
I can't calm down. I'm going to be indicted.
Okay, I think I get to go first this time. So I'm going to go and say Hyde.
Nice. That guy sucks.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Unhinged. He's like a Glenn Becky dude.
Yeah. Or he's like, I think he belongs in like the Nunberg circle of people.
Yeah.
The credit, you know, the.
Totally.
Those folks.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going Ghislaine.
Nice. I'm going to say Rudy.
Oh. Tom Barrick.
Fuck yeah. One day. I know. Going to pay off. God. We switched last week. I thought it was going to work for sure. I'll take superseding Parnas.
I'm going to say Prince.
Eric Prince.
Yeah, because I don't understand how that shit's okay.
Me neither. How is that shit okay?
Yeah.
And then I'll go superseding Freeman.
I will do AMI. Yeah, how are you, like, allowed to spy, like, in a private... But I guess, like, private eyes or whatever, those people function. Like, when you hire someone to catch someone cheating on you or something.
Yeah,
like,
but those people exist. You can't break into the Democratic groups.
Yeah, I guess that's what, that's what they're settling.
then I'll go superseding Korea. Correia.
And I'll do Pecker.
Pecker.
Alrighty.
You got Pecker and Ghislaine.
Ooh.
A lot of dick jokes in your Fantasy Diamond League today.
Yeah.
All right. We have a great interview coming up next to talk. We're going to talk about all the stuff that's going on in the McGann case, upcoming things, and then, you know, some of the other interesting Mueller decisions that are coming down the pike with Renato Mariotti, host of the On Topic podcast, right after this. Stay around. Hey, everybody, it's AG, and I wanted to tell you about a couple of podcasts that I think that you should check out. First, there's the Awful Neutral podcast. This is a D&D role-playing. We also do Call of Cthulhu and Kids on Bikes, which is based on Stranger Things. It's just a fun role-playing podcast. There's about 7 or 8 comedians that participate in this. Jordan, I know you're going to go play a non... player role or something, NPG, non-player character.
Really?
Some NPC.
Nice.
Today. And it's just a lot of fun. It's like a lot of improv and it's role-playing and it's a nice break from politics if you're looking for something like that. And Jordan, your pod's coming out soon.
Yes. We are, I'm pretty sure, launching this week. It's called I Disagree, and myself and my co-host Steve, we talk to people about topics that we disagree on, and we're all comics, so, you know, it's still the laughs, still the swears, not news-based, but conversational-based, and we've had a really good time recording a bunch of episodes we've got stacked up and in the pipeline, so I'm really excited to send that out.
Excellent. And there's a podcast called Incoming, which I am being featured on this week. It comes out on KPBS. That's an NPR station here in San Diego. I think it dropped Friday, so it's out now if you want to check it out. It's my story about how I mitigate my PTS with comedy and news and things like that. Really great podcast, and they have a whole series, all of these folks from the military trying to you know, get back into civilian life.
That's really cool.
And how they cope with that transition. So I think you'll really like it. Check it out. It's called Incoming. Search for it wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and give a rating if you get a chance. That would mean a lot to us. And those are the podcasts I want you to check out. So now we'll be going back to this podcast in 3, 2, 1. So joining us for the interview today is former federal prosecutor, CNN legal analyst, and host of one of my favorite podcasts. It's called On Topic. It's our friend Renato Mariotti. Renato, welcome back to Mueller, She Wrote. How are you?
Great. Always glad to be back on Mueller, She Wrote.
We are so happy to have you, and because you help us so much with like the legal analyses of so many different things that are coming out. I remember you were at our Chicago show live. You know, the day that the day that I think Nadler filed for the underlying Mueller documents with the court. So this is along those lines. So I wanted to give you a call. I had Renato memories. So just this week, Judge Reggie Walton, who's a Bush appointee, which normally I wouldn't bring up and normally doesn't matter until Trump got here. Reggie Walton ordered the Department of Justice to hand over the fully unredacted Mueller report, citing Barr's rollout of the Mueller report suspicious, thereby questioning Barr's credibility. And so I was thinking, I mean, those are really strong words from a sitting judge about the sitting attorney general. And I was wondering what your top line reaction to the ruling was.
Yeah, I was surprised. I agreed 100% with the judge's conclusions. And frankly, I think anybody who is a thinking person who is looking at Barr's letter, for example, that he wrote that supposedly was summarizing the Mueller report, I think it's hard not to see that he was being deceptive. After all, if you would literally cut off sentences, quotes mid-sentence, he would quote like portions of a sentence that Mueller said, and it would be very highly misleading. It was clear that he was deliberately misleading the public. But it's really something for a judge to say that. I mean, essentially, what Judge Walton was saying is, you, the government, are asking us to trust you when it comes to these FOIA redactions. I don't trust you because, Barr showed that he had a lack of credibility throughout this entire process. That's something you may believe, I may believe, but to hear a federal judge say it is really something.
Yeah, and in parallel, as this ruling is coming out, we get another 600-page dump from the BuzzFeed Jason Leopold FOIA request on the Mueller memos, which of course are highly redacted. And so I think that I remember Judge Walton saying early on, these redactions had better be on the up and up, or I will go through each one of them to determine their appropriateness. And so I wonder if that's sort of where he's heading with this. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think he wants to see what they call it, an in-camera. In other words, I think the judge wants to review the underlying unredacted documents himself. He's going to go through and he's going to see if the redactions are appropriate. And, that is unusual. I mean, look, anyone who's ever FOIA'd something will tell you that usually what you get back are a few pages filled with black, black marker through them redacting. And, a statement, a letter that says that there's a whole bunch of other documents that are being withheld because they fit within exceptions. FOIA is a very important tool. Journalists use it. But the fact of the matter is that the exceptions often are so large that they swallow up the rule. And agencies have every incentive to aggressively interpret those exceptions. And essentially, what he's saying is, the Justice Department released a statement saying, hey, Barr wasn't behind the redactions. It was career employees who did them. And what essentially the judge is saying is, look, because of Barr's actions, it really hurts the credibility of the entire department. I can't trust you going forward. And I also think, Judge Walton, to reference another friend of Mueller, she wrote, Andrew McCabe, Judge Walton was involved in a prior suit involving a FOIA request for McCabe documents, and he expressed some serious concerns about that prosecution, saying it was like a banana republic, the way that was being undertaken. And, of course, he's a former federal prosecutor himself. I think he views it through a lens that's very informed, and I think from his perspective, he's concerned about what's going on at DOJ right now.
Yeah, that's right. Judge Walton, as you pointed out, was the judge who gave an ultimatum to the Department of Justice that they needed to fish or cut bait. They had to either charge McCabe, close the case, or release these documents, the firing documents that were in the FOIA case. So he seemed to have not a lot of patience for what's been going on over at the DOJ. And you said the DOJ has responded to this suit, but I read their response and it doesn't seem, they don't seem to be defending Barr's rollout of the Mueller report. More, they seem to be jumping ahead and defending Barr and the department's redactions, which seems to be kind of putting the cart before the horse, like assuming what's next. You know what I'm saying? It just seemed like a really weird, like they were defending a different case, it seemed. It didn't make sense. It didn't seem coherent to me.
Well, strategically, I actually think if I was in their shoes, that might be the right thing to do, because it may very well be that the FOIA redactions are defensible. In other words, they say that career people handle them. That very well may be the truth. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's hard to defend when you get into the weeds, the specifics of what Barr did. So if you read the statement, they have like one line. Mm-hmm. where they say it wasn't true. We defend, you know, or that, you know, essentially that it wasn't true what he said about Barr's rollout. But it's just sort of a flat denial. And that's what you say as a lawyer. I'll tell you, when somebody just gives like a flat denial and they don't get into the weeds and it kind of explain why something's wrong, that can mean that there's just, you know, it's problematic when you get into the weeds. And that's what I think the issue is here. You know, if I was cross-examining Attorney General Barr, I think at 5 minutes, you know, it'd be very hard for him to explain why he, you know, selectively quoted from the document and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had a hard time explaining that to Congress as well. So, you know, we'll see how that rolls out. But a little bit of a legal breakdown here. This is a FOIA lawsuit. We're in the district court. What are the next steps? I assume the Department of Justice will appeal Walton's ruling. And then do we go through the dance where we go to the appeals court and then possible hearing and bonk and then SCOTUS? Is that the progression that we're probably looking at?
You know, it's possible, but I think it's more likely. I think it's also possible. And without knowing the details of their redactions, because I can't, none of us knows publicly. So I think it's likely that they're just going to, hand over the documents. And if what they said is true, I mean, after all, they put out this public statement in which they said that career staff handled this without any real input or direct involvement from Barr. If that's true, which it better be true, because they put that in a public statement now after being called out by the judge, you know, DOJ may just say, fine, take a look at it. And, you know, if what they're saying is true, then that will put an end to all this, right? The judge will look at it. He'll compare the redactions. I'm sure he'll have some changes. He'll say, you know, there's certain portions of them he disagrees with. But then that's it. You know, then the public will see whatever the judge comes up with and we'll be done with it. That would be, in my view, the savvy way of handling this, as long as what you're saying is on the up and up. Now, if they are trying to redact something that they shouldn't be, that they really don't want the public to find out about, well, then they are going to have to try to appeal this and fight it. And that could be a long process, and it may not work well for them. It'll draw more attention to this. So, you know, I think the judge's comments are within the realm of things that a judge could do, which is, you know, he's taking a close look at it. I could see the D.C. Circuit potentially, although it's skewed with democratically appointed nominees. It's certainly possible that they could take a different view on this. So, you know, it's possible it could work out for the DOJ, but I think the more prudent approach would potentially just be to hand this to the judge and let him take a look at it.
Yeah, sure. And like you said, if everything's on the up and up, and if it's not, I would assume that then their number one priority is to delay this past November, which could easily be done through a series of appeals.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly right.
But I also want to caution our listeners not to feel like just because the DOJ appeals this means that their redactions aren't on the up and up. I don't think that would necessarily be a correlation that you could just assume.
I think that's right. It could be that they want to vindicate, you know, Barr's reputation, or they want to show judges that you can't just push them around. But I have to say, if this was not politically charged, I think they would do, and they're really on the up and up, they would do what I suggested, because it's just the simpler thing to do. You know, don't forget the Justice Department typically is looking past the current case and they're thinking about the future, and they're going to have cases in front of Judge Walton for years to come. So you want to show him, I think demonstrate to him that the Justice Department is acting with credibility.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I question that they're actually caring about what happens in the future, but I don't want to put any undue opinions on you know, what may or may not be real. So anyway, thank you so much for answering those questions for us. We'll keep looking for this this ruling and how the DOJ reacts to it. I really appreciate your input. Everybody, please check out the On Topic podcast with former federal prosecutor and CNN legal analyst Renato Mariotti. Renato, thanks again for coming back on Mueller, She Wrote.
Thanks so much, AG. Anytime.
All right, everybody, that's our show. Thanks again to Renato Mariotti. He's just such an awesome person, very smart, great legal mind. I appreciate him coming on, former federal prosecutor, CNN legal analyst, just a cool dude. And thanks for, you know, listening. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we've gotten so many wonderful reviews on Apple Podcasts lately for both shows. Really, really nice ones.
Very cool. I love reading those.
Me too.
We've passed, I think, 1,200 reviews on Daily Beans now on Apple Podcast.
Ooh, I know we're 5 stars on there right now, too, which is nice.
Yeah, dude.
If you have a review for Daily Beans, go make it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been encouraging people in the newsletter and on Twitter and stuff. So
even if you just write the word butts 10 times.
Totally.
Give us 5 stars for the butts.
If you aren't subscribed to the Daily Beans, you should subscribe. And if you are subscribed and you like the show, give us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Cool.
We would appreciate it. Any final words from you guys? Ladies? Women?
We got another primary.
Yeah, we do. And we're going to go over all the goody-goody election stuff. And the Daily Beans comes out tomorrow morning. Unless you're a patron, then you get it a day early and you get it ad-free. Mm-hmm. So it's worth the $3 a month, I think, for that premium content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll dig into our primary feelings.
Totally. And we do video shit
right
now.
After this.
Yeah.
And your hair is very sexy, apparently. And my tattoos are also,
yes. Yeah. Yes, yep. we got a comment.
Direct responses.
Yes. We put out special bonus video content if you're a patron. And we've been starting to get some crushy comments from people. Mm-hmm. Jordan has beautiful flowing hair and AG's tattoos are sexy.
And we do those as soon as we have answers to questions. So if you want to submit a question, find our tweets or go on our Patreon website, patreon.com/MullerSheWrote, and submit a question. And as soon as we've got some questions together, we put together a video content. Mm-hmm. We aren't putting it out on a timeline or anything, but we should have about one a week out. Yeah. So I'll be wearing my onesie this week.
I put call outs out. So I put out a call out about once a week for the questions, and we're getting some awesome ones for this week. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And it's a red plaid onesie. and the thing is that winter is ending. We're in our third spring now. Well, I think we're back into third winter.
Yeah. Because it rained
here in San Diego But it's I'm not gonna be able to wear that onesie for much longer. It's gonna start getting hot. So you're definitely, if you want to see the onesie, it'll actually probably be up there for all eternity.
In the summer, they can see us sweat.
Oh,
yeah, that's what I was saying off the mic. I was like, "Hell, God, I am a very sweaty person."
Excited for that.
Yeah. Well, me too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it. Thank you so much. Please take care of each other and take care of yourselves. I've been AG.
I've been Jordan Coburn.
Mandy Reeder.
And this is Mueller, She Wrote.
Mueller, She Wrote is executive produced and directed by AG and Jordan Coburn, with engineering and editing by Mackenzie Mazzell and Starburns Industries. Our marketing manager, production and social media direction is by Amanda Reeder. Fact-checking and research by AG, Jordan Coburn, and Amanda Reeder, and our knowledgeable listeners. Our web design and branding are by Joel Reeder with Moxie Design Studios, and our website is MuellerSheWrote.com.
Hi, I'm Harry Littman, host of Talking Feds, a roundtable that brings together prominent figures from government law and journalism for a dynamic discussion of the most important topics of the day. Each Monday, I'm joined by a slate of Feds favorites and new voices to break down the headlines and give the insider's view of what's going on in Washington and beyond, plus sidebars explaining important legal concepts read by your favorite celebrities. Find Talking Feds wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry...
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder, and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, if I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.